are so crowded today. We've got Dominique Dawes and Emmy Mullins, who is the president-elect of the Women's Sports Foundation, coming on to talk about another issue in sports, which is equality, gender equality, and what's going on with the Olympic and Paralympic Games and their report card there. And I know Buddy Tevens at Dartmouth College, which went co-ed when we were just young men. Those issues still remain because you've had to deal with a pool, if you will, at Dartmouth, which shrunk from 1,000 men per class to 500. That's got to be difficult for you.
Well, it really didn't impact the recruiting numbers, but certainly the number of people on campus, the male numbers on campus dwindled. The league itself has kind of governed how many young men you can accept each year that are involved in football. But it is a change from the past, certainly.
Okay, now here's the hard question I wanted to ask you. To be honest, as you look at the difference between Stanford and what it could offer athletes and Dartmouth College, there is a growing trend among parents raising kids at the age of 10 and 8 and 12 where the idea, oh, that I can get my kid to get a college scholarship is corrupting their experience of sports. And we'll ask Fred Eng about this in a second. What do you think about that?
I think it's fairly accurate in many cases. The young men, young women who can get off the roll, if you will, with a full scholarship, it's an attraction. The young men and the young women, I'll say it to the guys from this point forward, guys are looking for an opportunity to go on to college, and if someone offers to pay for it, it makes a tremendous difference. What I'm seeing is a growing trend where there's tremendous emphasis by parents, where there's not as many two or three sport athletes at the high school level. Specificity seems to be the thing pushing and marketing guys at camps, which is wearing, in some cases, poor athletes out, going to 6-7 different football camps during the course of the summer in my sport, and all trying to do so to attract attention, ultimately with the hope that a young man or a young woman would attract a scholarship offer. And it's some people do it wonderfully, some people it's a little bit over the top.
Fred Eng, what does this do to corrupting the influence and the relationship of the parent with their children?
Well, what you have is a couple of things. Number one, it's far below 10 years old now. You got parents with kids 6 years old that are determined to have their kid get a scholarship, and they're involved in travel teams, specialty training, the whole bit. And what we forget in the process of many parents, this is about education, but most of the parents think it's reaching it to the big time in the pros.
Buddy Tevens, this also impacts what you are able to do or not able to do in the Ivy League, which does not have pure athletic scholarships. A lot of people don't understand it. How difficult does that make it for you to recruit people that are equally good academically but have these other scholarships that are tempting them?
Well, when you go head-to-head, the big difference is the quality of the educational experience. And people do respect the Ivy League and the level of education, not to say we monopolize quality education, but people understand that it is a pretty good situation academically. In many cases, it's an eye-opener that we don't offer athletic scholarships. We talk strictly about financial aid, parental need, parental income, and so forth. And for some families, that's an immediate turnoff, that if my son doesn't have a scholarship offer, then he doesn't have an interest. With others, their thought is, we understand the process. We know you're a little bit different, but the quality of football play, coupled with the quality of the educational opportunity, they still have an interest. What I found more often than not is if it's a 1A situation and a scholarship is offered, we probably will not retain that individual. Stanford or Northwestern, a Duke comes in, very, very strong academic situations, but they pay the whole freight. We will probably lose out in that situation. On the flip, we will have some other institutions who may offer scholarships who may not be by reputation as strong as an Ivy situation, and some young men and parents will turn down because they do get a good bit of financial aid, or they may be in a fortunate situation. They don't need a scholarship or need financial aid to attend an institution. But more often than not, the hardest ones are when you have a guy that is offered a scholarship and we're trying to pitch a financial aid situation. We may come out in the short end on that.
And we're being a little unfair. It's $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 a year. So, you know, the expectations and the burden on parents is also increasing. Final question to you, buddy, because you were an outstanding head coach for Dartmouth back in the day in the early 90s. Then you went to Tulane, you went to Florida, you were with Steve Spurrier, you were the head coach at Stanford. What do you bring back from those experiences that inform the differences in how you approach recruiting, how you approach coaching now back at Dartmouth?
What I look for is a passion to play amongst the athletes, and I think this is true at any level, in any school, any academic situation, scholarship or non-scholarship. We try to identify guys that just love the game and they love to compete, and we'll train them in the same fashion that we did at Florida or at Stanford or Illinois or any other major college operation, and the players respond very, very effectively to that. We do have to monitor. In my situation, we have guys that will major in engineering, pre-medicine, where they will have lab work that may conflict with practice. We build that in. We understand that maybe your starting center is missing on Wednesday afternoon because he has a bio lab. That's okay. We have smart young men, and we kind of work with them. And it's fun for me to see them compete at a high level. There's a good number of Ivy League. Yourself, a great example. Reggie Williams, another. Jay Fiedler from Dartmouth. Dave Shuler, who have gone on but graduated in 4 years with a degree that is very, very meaningful, can open doors after their football experience, but they didn't compromise their level of play either.
Well, we want to appreciate you for the leadership you provide in making sure that athletes today can get a true education and develop as complete people as well. Buddy Tevens, thank you, sir.
Thanks, Nick.
We'll be back with you, I hope, in coming weeks. And speaking of issues in sports, on Friday, we're still joined by Fred Eng, and we're talking now with Emmy Mullins, who is the president-elect of the Women's Sports Foundation and has been a champion Paralympic athlete as well. Emmy, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yeah, sure, Amy.
Amy.
I know, it's spelled the French way, but I'm not French, so it's kind of...
we know in French it means the loved one, so
yes.
We'll try to approach these important issues in a loving manner. We're also joined by Dominique Dawes, who's been a great Olympic champion herself. Dominique, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, we're going to jump into this. Number one is, let's just go to the report card itself, because women's participation in the Olympic movement is very slowly improving, but you're also having to deal with cultural differences in the Olympic movement in different countries and underrepresentation, in particular, what I'm getting from this report, in the leadership levels. Let's start with IOC governance. And what is the difference, Amy, between IOC governance, which you give an F on the report card, and the U.S. Olympic Committee itself, would you give the participation of women as a D-plus rating?
Well, it's exactly what you were mentioning as far as some cultural differences and the international landscape. The USOC, I think, understands that we really need to make this a priority, an initiative to get, you know, you're not going to be able to develop more female athletes at a young age to get to the elite level unless you have it as part of your structure and part of your game plan and part of your leadership initiative to have women a part of the entire overall organizing committee.
Okay, and so you are elected president because I imagine that you are perceived as the one that can further these things. What is the strategy, Dominique Dawes, as an athlete who's articulate, who's attractive, who's got influence in the media? What is your strategy as women begin to gain more confidence and footholds in the media, footholds in the structure of leadership in this country? What is the strategy to move this forward?
Well, some of the recommendations that the Women's Sports Foundation has offered up was to the IOC to possibly look at themselves and make sure that they are showing equality in their different committees as their, you know, their board members with the Olympic Committee or, of course, the IOC governance. So our goal, part of the Women's Sports Foundation, is to make sure that the IOC is accountable, to make sure that, you know, there's equality, 50% women, 50% men, and that's not the case right now. We've also given them some recommendations to possibly add in some financial incentives for the different countries that choose to make measures to balance things out. I mean, as you've seen in our report, there's some good grades, like a B for U.S. Olympic participation of women, and then, of course, there's the F for the U.S. Olympic Committee governance, and we want to make sure that the IOC is putting their foot down and making sure that countries and governing bodies are making the necessary changes.
We're joined by Fred Eng for the National Alliance for Youth Sports, who's working internationally in Africa as well to provide the wonderful teaching of values and its benefits through sport out there. And Fred, I've got to think that there is some impact, some echo from the efforts of people like Dominique Dawes and Amy Mullins in terms of how it affects the perception of girls at the younger ages as well. Do you see any change in how girls are being coached and also how women coaches are conducting themselves?
Well, let me put it this way very quickly, Nick, because I enjoy hearing Dominique and Amy there talking about it. But if you think of sports as a pyramid, where we need to develop girls for sports participation as it gets higher to the top of the pyramid, and let's call that the Olympics, is giving them the opportunity at the base of the pyramid. That's what the program we're doing worldwide called Game On Youth Sports throughout Africa, and that is where the emphasis needs to be, giving young girls the opportunity for skills and knowledge and motivation to play sports.
Let's get back to Amy. As a leader, you've actually been someone who is, you've been involved in magazines where there is a tendency, shall we say, for magazines to portray women for their physical beauty in a way that maybe men are not. Do you see any increase or decrease in sexism in general and how magazines and the media cover you?
Cover me in particular or women?
Cover you through your own lens.
Well, I certainly have noticed a difference. I mean, I've been really privileged to be an athlete with a disability who was mainstreamed. But that happened because of a large part of insistence on my part to focus on the athleticism and not the human interest side of my story. And that took a little bit of time. That took some years. But certainly I've come a long way in the way the media covers me and my story. I think as far as sexism goes, we have a long way to go. It's part of the advertising strategy of certainly the Western media that a certain importance is placed on a physical attractiveness, and I do think that that carries for men as well as women, but in not such a great amount as it does for women. I do think it's changing, though. I mean, I was just at a luncheon the other day. And Danica Patrick was being honored, and certainly, you know, her athletic accomplishments, as well as like Dominique or Julie Foudy or Mia Hamm, that's what is highlighted first. And you know, we're looking at the first generation right now of Title IX athletes. So I'm very excited to see what happens in the next decade.